All right, good evening, everyone. I want to take this opportunity to welcome everyone to this Yisker share. I want to begin first by thanking our sponsors. So to begin by thanking our Talmud Torah sponsors for the month of Sivan, Justin and Abigail Rosemore, for dedicating all of the Shiurim and Drashos this month in memory of their beloved son, who's actually Yartzeit is tonight and tomorrow, Kobe, Yaakov David, Zichron Levracha, Ben Yosef Tzadok. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, his neshama will have an aliyah and his family a nechama. We thank our monthly sponsor, Alan and Sue Meyerowitz and family, Jason, Deborah, Justin, Rebecca, Mindy, Simcha, and all of the grandchildren for dedicating all of the Shi'urim and Drashos this month, and the Zechus of Arafuah Shlema for Sue Meyerowitz, who actually is going in for a bone marrow transplant, Emir Tzashem, on Erev Yom Tiv. Shulam is Tova, Bas Mindel. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, she will have a complete and enduring refuah. We also thank our Day of Learning sponsors, Rachel Moss and Dina Brookmeyer, in honor of the birthday of their mother, Mrs. Judy Moss, wishing her bracha, Admeh Ve'esrim Shana, with health, happiness, nachos, and experiencing the simcha of Moshiach. Such a beautiful, beautiful birthday wish. We certainly wish Judy an incredible year, incredible years. Admeh Ve'esrim Shanim Tovos. And with that, let us begin. So I wanna begin by thanking all of you for joining us this evening. And really, Jeremy, is everything working all right? Just want to make sure that... Okay, Jeremy, I'm not seeing anything from Jeremy, so I'm assuming that we're working okay. So I want to really begin by thanking everyone for joining us this evening. You know, I have to tell you a little bit on a personal confession. So, you know, we did this type of shir before Pesach, and because we were recognizing that we weren't going to be in shul for Pesach, and it was such an aberration not to have davening, not to have shul, not to have yisker. And, you know, to be honest, never in my wildest dreams did I think that 7 weeks later, here on the eve of Shavuos, that we would still be in a similar type of situation. Baruch Hashem, it is true that many things have changed over the last couple of weeks and really over the last couple of days, where Baruch Hashem, again, we begin to see smaller steps towards that which is normal. And in fact, again, come the Yom Tov of Shavuos, there will be some who will have the opportunity to be able to recite the Yizkor as part of a minyan, but still many who will not. Many who will not. And as such, Yizkor being such a personal and important part of our Yom Tov experience, of our Tefillah experience, that I thought it was absolutely necessary to be able to go ahead and spend a little bit of time focusing on this important tefillah, and more importantly, you know, last time I did this before Pesach, we focused a lot more on the actual Yizkor prayer itself. Tonight, I'd really like to focus a little bit more on the dynamic of Yizkor. Because for many of us who recite Yizkor, Yizkor offers us the opportunity to be able to connect in a profound way with our loved ones. The truth is, we know the power of our relationship with our loved ones is that they transcend death. We see this. We see this in a halachic sense. We see this in a hashkafic sense. The relationships we build during life don't end when the biological life of a loved one comes to an end in this world. But rather, our relationships have the ability to continue, to endure, and even in certain respects to grow, albeit in a very different way, even when our loved ones are no longer here. But I think that's one of the most fundamental issues. And so, before we go on with that fundamental issue, Yizkor, when we get to recite Yizkor, and you know, I could say on a personal level, I'm very privileged, thank God, to have my parents and to have, thank God, my nuclear family very much intact. I've always stayed in for Yizkor as the Rav of the Shul. I stay in for Yizkor, but I use it as an opportunity to recite the tefillahs for my grandparents, for extended mishpacha, for members of the shul who perhaps don't have anyone to be able to recite this particular tefillah for them. And even on a personal level, I find it to be an incredibly overwhelming and cathartic experience. An opportunity for me to connect with my loved ones, to connect with other people, but also a little bit to connect with your own mortality. Because what Yizkor reminds us is that life is a finite non-renewable resource. And we know not how long we have in this world. You know, even when I look around the screen and I get to see so many of you, which is, I want to thank Jeremy Lassen so much for working so hard and creating our Zoom infrastructure so that Baruch Hashem, we could continue to interact. I see so many of you who are on tonight, and I know so many of you, and I know your families, and I know your losses, and I know what Yisker, I don't know what Yisker means to you, because you can never really get into someone's loss. You can never really know what someone's loss is. But from an outside perspective, I see the way that so many of you who are on this year tonight feel about Yisker, interact with Yisker, experience that almost like an experience of a loss over and over and over again. And so even though we may not have that experience this year, because I would venture to say that even those of us who may have access to a minyan come Yisker, the Yisker is going to be very different. It's probably going to be faster. It's certainly not going to have, you know, the buildup of a drasha before it or things like that, which maybe some people like, some people don't like. That might be a plus or a minus, depending on your orientation. But it's definitely going to be different. And I think it's going to be much more utilitarian and probably much more mechanical and probably lacking a little bit of the depth and certainly the time allotted that we normally had. So hopefully in our learning tonight, we will, emirtz Hashem, not focus as much on the tefillah of Yisker, but maybe focus a little bit more on our loved ones for whom we recite Yisker. And I think the goal of our shir tonight is to find a way to come closer to the neshamas of those who we have lost, but those who we still so desperately love. Because at the end of the day, isn't that what we're trying to do? I want to make sure that even if I can't hold my loved one in my arms, that I could still do something for their soul, that I could still do something for their memory, that I could still do something for their neshama. And I think one of the core fundamental questions that you often grapple with is, what do the dead know? When people leave this world, we believe in an afterlife. We believe in Olam Haba. We believe that the neshama goes on to a beautiful celestial domicile to spend all eternity. But what's my connection with the neshama? Does the neshama of my loved one know what's happening with me, not know what's happening with me? Is there a connection, the same connection, different type of connection? So the Gemara discusses this. If you take a look at number one on your source sheets, I believe that the link went out. Maybe Jeremy, if you have the link, maybe you could post it just in the chat so that people could, if you haven't done already, so that people could download it. But if not, I'm going to read all the sources outside anyway, so you'll hear. So the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Avo, Kol she'omrim b'fnei ames yodea, ad she'istom agola. Anything you say, any words that are said in the presence of the deceased, the person who has passed away hears. Until when? Until the grave is filled in. So the dead have the ability to hear what is happening in this world up until the time that the grave itself is filled in. So the Gemara says, "Pligi b'Rabbi Chiya, Rabbi Shimon, b'Rabbi, Chad Amar ad she'istom hagolel, v'chad Amar ad she'isakel habasar." Some say that yes, the dead only hear what is happening until the grave is filled in, but others say, in fact, until the body is gone, until the body is reduced to dust, the dead still hear what is going on in this world. Now we're going to pick up on this theme, because Chazal, the rabbis, clearly understood a connection between the physical body and connection to life in this world. So a fascinating dispute. Everyone agrees that even after a person passes away, they can still hear what is happening in this world, what is happening with their family. But a machlokus about how long that awareness lasts. Does it last until burial is over? Or does it last ultimately again, even until the body is reduced to dust? There's another discussion. The Gemara says, this quotes another opinion, all this from a Gemara Masechta Shabbos. And number two, the Gemara says, Kol shnimasar chodesh gufo kayim v'nishmasa ola v'yoradas. La'achar shnimasar chodesh haguf batal v'nishmasa ola v'shuv eino yoradas. Another opinion, the Gemara says, for the first 12 months after a person passes away, the neshama shuttles back and forth between the celestial sphere and this world, up and down, up and down, up and down. The neshama wanting to find out what is happening in this world, but after 12 months, the neshama stops coming down, and the neshama simply resides in the celestial sphere. And by the way, there are other opinions. Other opinions that quote the idea, a beautiful passage in the Zohar, that says any time you utter the name of your loved one, their neshama comes down to this world to be with you. An incredible idea. Simple utterance of the name brings the neshama of my loved one into this world. So you see this incredible tension amongst Chazal, this incredible tension amongst the rabbis. What is the nature of the interaction between the soul when it leaves this world and the family it leaves behind? So is communication cut off essentially from the time that the grave is filled in? Does it go on for 12 months or does it go on forever? That as long as I utter the name of my loved one, some way, somehow, I am able to summon their soul from the celestial sphere to be here with me in this world. I think we'd all agree that of those opinions, the last one is certainly, again, the most comforting. The notion that I could utter the name of a loved one, it's such a reassuring thought that as soon as I call out the name of my loved one, somehow it's as if their soul is at my beck and call. All I need to do is call out. All I need to do is utter the name of my loved one, and they're right here next to me in this world. But I want to share with you an incredible Gemara. And the Gemara, so these are the different opinions as to what the soul knows, how the soul interacts, what the soul hears. Again, there's much more to discuss on this topic, but I want to draw your attention to what I think is an incredible and overwhelming Gemara that helps frame the conversation a little bit of a different way. If you take a look at number 3 on your sheet, the Gemara tells a story. The Gemara is a little bit of a longer story. So if you're following along on the sheet, you'll see we're not going to do everything, but I'll speak it outside as well. The Gemara tells a story that the sons of Rabbi Chiya once went out to the villages. They once left, whatever this means, or for whatever the reason, they left the yeshiva, and they went out to the surrounding villages to learn. As a result of not being in an atmosphere of Torah, they forgot their learning, or at least they forgot some of their learning. What happens? So the Gemara says, "Kamitzari lat kure," and no matter how hard they tried to remember their learning, they could not remember. Amar lo chad lechavrei, yada avun b'haitzara. So one brother said to the other, "Do you think Father knows about our pain? Do you think Father knows about our pain?" So they were wondering, you know, their father had passed away. Do you think Father knows about our pain that we've forgotten our learning? Amar lo idach mina yada. So the brother responds, how would Father know about our pain? He's not in this world. He's no longer amongst the living. How would he know what's happening with us? Amar lo idach velo yada. V'haksiv. So the Gemara goes on and says, so there's a dispute amongst the brothers. One brother saying, Father doesn't know anymore what's happening in this world, for he has left. Second brother saying, Father certainly knows what is happening in this world. So machlokes, a dispute amongst the sons of Rabbi Chiya, wondering again, does our Father know our pain? Now here it's amazing, because the pain they're describing, of course, is not of a physical nature. They're not physically distressed. They're spiritually distressed about the fact that they've forgotten their learning. And you have two children, it's such a moving Gemara, two children wondering between themselves. Our Father who loved us so much when He was in this world, our Father who brought us into this world, who cared for us, who loved us, who nurtured us. Do you think our Father still knows about the pain? Does a father know about the pain that his children are enduring, even when the Father is no longer in this world? So of course, the Gemara doesn't resolve it. But the Gemara quotes another story. Now, amazingly enough, now we're in a story within a story. So the Gemara says, I'm in number 3, 4 lines in, Vatanya, get ready for this story. And this is perhaps one of the most dramatic stories. Maise b'chassid echad, now it's interesting, you'll see that the identities of the individuals in the story are obscured. You'll see why in just a moment. There was a story once with a very pious man. Shenasan dinar la'ani be'erev Rosh Hashanah b'shani b'tzuras. What happens? There was a pious man, and it was a time of famine. And it happened that on Erev Rosh Hashanah, a pauper showed up at this chassid's door, and the chassid gave him his last remaining coin. So again, the chassid himself was a pauper also, but the chassid gave his last remaining coin to the pauper on Erev Rosh Hashanah. So what happened? V'hiknitaso ishto. He got into a fight with his wife. Got into a fight. What was the fight about? So a lot of times, like fights are about, right? Money. So Mrs. Chassid was very upset that her husband gave away the last remaining coin they had. Yeah, I think this is like a scene that plays out in a lot of homes. Why don't you stop being so pious on my account, right? Why don't you be pious on your own cheshbon, right? Stop being pious, because now, thank you very much, you spent the last coin, you know, now we have nothing for Yomtiv, we have nothing going on. So they get into a fight. First of all, this is also very affirming that apparently even Hasidim get into fights, right? So even pious people sometimes get into fight with their spouses. If you just came for this piece of Gemara, it's not even a Shalom Bayis here, but how affirming is this? Even pious people sometimes fight with their spouses. But it gets even better. V'halach v'lan bebeis hakvaris. So apparently this wasn't just any fight, this was a doozy. This wasn't the type of fight where you sleep on the couch, but rather, again, this was the type of fight where you go to sleep in the cemetery. So that tells you, by the way, what kind of fight this was. And by the way, just so you understand, this is Rosh Hashanah. This is Rosh Hashanah. So they're getting into a fight on Erev Rosh Hashanah. And such a fight is this couple getting into that the husband can't even sleep in the house. He goes to sleep in the cemetery. It's interesting, by the way, the Marashah says, why did he sleep at the cemetery? He doesn't have, so strange. He doesn't have a friend. He doesn't have a family member. So the Marashah says something amazing. He was too embarrassed that anyone should know that he fought with his wife on Erev Rosh Hashanah. Isn't this profound? Meaning, it's never good to fight with your spouse, but to get into a fight with your spouse on Erev Rosh Hashanah, and such a fight that, again, forget about the couch, that mama, she can't sleep in the same house. So he was too embarrassed. He decides to go to sleep in the cemetery. Watch the story. So the Gemara says, what happens? V'shama tshtei rucho shemesapros zulazu. In the middle of the night, he hears two spirits talking with each other. Two neshamas, two souls, people have passed away, hears them speaking with each other. Amrachad lechaverta. So one, these were two girls. And the Gemara points out these were two girls who passed away when they were young. The Gemara goes on. See, here's these two girls speaking in the cemetery on Rosh Hashanah night. Amrachad lechaverta. Chavirasi. Boi v'noshot ba'olam, v'nishra me'achori ha'pargud ma'poranos ba'ola olam. So one girl says to his friend, my friend, come with me. Let's fly away from here. Let's go behind the curtain. Achori ha'pargud refers to the innermost sanctum of God. Let's go fly up to the heavens. We'll go hear what God is planning for this year. Because remember, again, it's Rosh Hashanah. What happens on Rosh Hashanah? HaKadosh Baruch Hu sits in judgment of the entire world. And again, he plans for what the coming year is going to hold. So let's fly up together, go behind the curtain, and hear what God has in mind for this world. So listen to this. The exchange is dramatic. Amar lachaverta, eini yachol. So the second girl responds, I can't go with you. Sha'ani kavura b'machatzelas shel kanim, because I was buried in a mat of reeds. I was buried in a mat of reeds, and therefore I can't go. So we'll see exactly what this means in just a little bit. Ela lechiat uma sha'at shoma'as amrili. But you go. So the second girl says to the first girl, I can't go because I'm buried in a mat of reeds, but you go. Tell me what you find out. So the first girl goes, she ascends to the heavens, she comes back. The second girl who can't go, her soul is trapped here in this world. So the second girl says to the first, "Nu, what did you hear? What did you hear? What does God have in store for the world?" So what happens? She said, I heard that whoever plants wheat after the first rain is going to lose his crop, because there's going to be a hailstorm after the first rain. So whoever plants after the first rain is going to lose his crop. Now remember, my friends, who's hearing this whole conversation? The chassid, right? The chassid who got into a fight with his wife because he gave away the last coin they had, sleeping in the cemetery. He hears this entire conversation. Halachu Vizara Berevi Ishniya. So you have to understand, this is like the Talmudic equivalent of like insider trading. So understand what's just happened over here. He just got a piece of information from behind the divine curtain that whoever plants after the first rain is going to lose their crop. So what does he do? Everybody plants by the first rain. He waits for the second rain. He waits for the second rain. Shakala olam kulo laka, shalo lo laka. So you can imagine, by the way, he made a windfall because all the crops were destroyed. Anyone who planted after the first rain, which is when people normally plant, all of that was destroyed. This guy, Mamish, had a windfall. He had a windfall. L'shana acheres, halach v'lanu beis agaras. Listen to the story. Next year, Rosh Hashanah, the chassid decides to go back and sleep in the cemetery. Now, this year there wasn't a fight. There wasn't a fight. Now he's just a good businessman. See, he decides, you know what? Again, I could hear what's happening in the world. I'll listen into the two spirits. He goes back to sleep in the cemetery. So same conversation. Girl number one says to girl number two, come, let's fly up. Let's ascend into the heavens and hear what God has planned for the world this year. Amra la chaverasi. And the second girl responds to the first, my friend, I told you already last year, I can't go with you, for I was buried in a mat of reeds, and therefore I cannot ascend. But you go. You go and tell me what you hear. So the story plays out. The first girl goes, she comes back. The second girl says, no, what did you hear? So I heard this year, whoever plants wheat after the second rain, the crop is going to be destroyed. It's going to be wind blasted. Who hears this? The chassid hears this. Halach v'zara b'ravi arishona. So the chassid this year decides to plant his grain after the first rain. Shalkala olam kulo nishtaf. Vishalo lo nishtaf. So what happened? Everybody's crop was destroyed. And once again, he has a windfall. So now, listen to how the story goes. Amrlo ishto. So the chassid's wife, see, you know, you would think she would just say, shkoyach, right? Great job. She says essentially, you're not a good businessman. You've never been a good businessman. Hence, we were poor up until 2 years ago. So what's up, right? What's going on? How exactly is it that you're being matzliach, right? Suddenly again, your mazel's turned around. You've never had good mazel. Again, you're a pious guy. That's fantastic. But we've always been poor. And now suddenly again, you know how to read the wheat market, the wheat market so well that you know how to go ahead and when to plant and how to plant. What's the pshat? So he tells her, Amrlo, Mipsi the Gemara says, Sachla kala dvarim halalu. He tells her the whole story. He tells her the whole story. Remember that Rosh Hashanah 2 years ago, we got into a fight. I went to sleep in the cemetery. I overheard two spirits talking. And he tells her the whole story. One girl said to the other girl, let's go up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The second girl said, I can't go because I'm buried in the mat of reeds. He tells her the whole story. Watch this. Amru lo, Amru, they said, Lo hayu yamim mu'atim at shenafla kitata. Ben ishto shal osa chasiru, ben ima shal osa riba. So listen to how this is an incredible story. Only a couple of days go by, and the wife of the chassid got into a fight with the mother of girl number two. Right? Remember again, the girl who had passed away was buried in a mat of reeds. So the wife of the chassid and the mother of the second girl who had passed away, they got into a fight. And what happens? The wife of the chassid gets so upset that she says, Amrla, l'chi ve'erech b'teich, shikvur b'machatzela shalkanim. Why don't you, this is what the wife of the chassid said, why don't you leave me alone and go attend to the needs of your daughter who is buried in a mat of reeds. Okay, the story plays on. L'shana ha'cheres. It's Rosh Hashanah number three. Rosh Hashanah number three. The chassid is now going back to the cemetery because where else do you sleep on the night of Rosh Hashanah? Right? So he's going back to the cemetery now again because he wants to pick up information and the same exchange happens. The first girl says to the second girl, come, let's fly away together. Let's go up and hear what God has planned. The second girl says this year, she says something different. Look at the last two lines of number three. The second girl says, Chavirasi, Henichani. So the second girl says to the first girl, my friend, please leave me be. Dvarim, Shebeini lebeinech kavar nishmu'um beinachayim. The words that you and I are speaking have already been heard amongst the living. So girl number two says to girl number one, we shouldn't converse anymore because someone is listening to our conversation. Someone is eavesdropping. Our words have become known amongst the living. So the Gemara says, what do you see from here? Alma yadi. You see from here that in fact the dead are aware of the conversations of the living. So the Gemara here understands this story to be a proof to the fact that even when people leave this world, they still have an awareness of the conversations of their families. So the girl who was buried in the reeds, she heard about what had happened to her mother. She had heard somehow that her mother had gotten into a fight with someone, and that again, somehow, the whole conversation that was happening between these two spirits was told over to the world of the living. So a very dramatic Gemara. A dramatic Gemara on a variety of different levels. And by the way, it's not our topic for tonight, but in all seriousness, you know, there are lessons about Shalom Bayis in this Gemara, and there are lessons ultimately, again, about how we talk in moments of anger, as you see that the wife of the Chassid loses it. What a terrible thing to say to someone. Stop bothering me, and why don't you go deal with your daughter who's buried in a mat of reeds? What a horrible thing to say. So you see lessons in Shalom Bayis, you see lessons ultimately again in how you deal with other people in moments of anger. But the part I want to draw your attention to is the Gemara using this story as a way of highlighting the idea that even when our loved ones leave this world, they have an acute awareness of what is happening within our family. Within the family they left behind, they have an acute awareness of what it is that is occurring. The family, the living don't need to communicate anything, don't need to say anything, but the deceased have this awareness as to what it is that is occurring in the lives of those who they left behind. But I want to focus on one very interesting piece, which is this notion of the girl buried in the mat of reeds. Right? What is that part of the story? So just to understand, Rashi comments that the problem with reeds, a mat of reeds, is that it prevents the body from decomposing. It prevents the body from returning to dust. And because the body can't return to dust, therefore the Gemara seems to say as a result of that, the soul can't take flight. The soul can't ascend if the body remains intact. That was the conversation between these two girls. The first girl was ready to ascend, was ready to take flight. The second girl says, I can't go with you. I can't go with you. Why? She keeps saying it's the same answer. I can't go with you because I'm buried in a mat of reeds. As a result, my body doesn't have the ability to return back to the earth. And because of that, I cannot ascend with you. So the tzlach, in his commentary on the Gemara, the tzlach is the no Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Cheskel ben Yehuda Landau, born in 1713 in Opata, Poland. He died in 1793. So the no Rabbi Yehuda was probably one of the most famous rabbinic personalities of his generation. So the tzlach discusses, I don't understand. What the no Rabbi Yehuda says, I don't understand. Why does the state of the body have any impact on the soul? Meaning when a person passes away, so I understand when I'm alive, my body and my soul are tethered, right? My body and my soul are together. But the moment that a person passes away, then at the end of the day, why does the body hold back the soul? And remember again, according to what the Gemara is saying over here is, forget about the matter of reeds. What it's saying is that even under a regular circumstance, the soul doesn't fully take flight to the celestial sphere until the body returns to dust. So why? Why is the soul held back from its celestial trajectory because of the state of the body? And the Tzlach says something absolutely amazing. If you take a look at number four, paragraph B's, he says something quite dramatic. He says, second line, Shekari kolzman shebasar haguf kayum, Ein hanefesh yichol al hiparid mimeno, ad sheyichla habasar haguf legamrei, va'az ola haruach lemalo. So essentially what the No Rabbi Yehuda says is that over the course of life in this world, there is an incredibly strong bond that is created between body and soul. And even when death occurs, that bond is not dissolved until the body dissolves. That bond is intact until the body is no longer. It is only once the physicality of the person is gone that the soul has the ability to ascend to the highest level of the celestial sphere. And therefore says in Ode B'Yehud, this is Lekach, Mitzvah Likbar Bakarko. That is why, again, in Judaism, he goes through all of this. He says, this is why we bury in the ground. We bury in the ground. And the truth is, again, even according to many customs, even without a casket, and even the tachrichim, the shrouds we use, are simple linen shrouds. The goal is that nothing should impede the process of the body returning to the earth. Because the faster the body returns to the earth, the freer the soul becomes to ascend to where it needs to go. And the tragic element of this story, says the Tzlach, is that there was this young girl, which again, we don't know the circumstances of her death. We don't know her story, but we're talking about a child, the Gemara says. We're talking about a child who had passed away. So there was a tragic element of her story, and the tragedy compounded by an inability of her soul to ascend on high, because the soul was somehow tethered to this world because of the existence of the body. The Tzlach says, the lesson to us teaching that whatever we could do to simplify burial in a way so as to allow the body to return to dust, to free the soul. But you see, says the Tzlach, says in Ode B'Yehud, there's something amazing, that the ability of the soul to reach its destination is fundamentally rooted in its ability to detach from the body. The soul of my loved one could only get where it really needs to get to only once it is fully detached from the body. And I think that there's such a profound lesson in this Gemara, because this tension of the body and soul is one that we live with each and every day. Right, that tension of, on one hand, again, I am a soul, which is a spark of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and I'm a body, which is a physical, corporeal entity. And every moment of every day, I have this tension. What am I? What am I? Am I a body that happens to house a soul? Or am I a soul that is housed in a body? And that's not a question of semantics. That gets to the fundamental essence of who and what we are. Are we primarily spiritual beings that happen to have a body because at the end of the day that allows me to interact with this world? But really, if you ask me who I am, I'm a spiritual being. Who am I? I am a neshama. That's who I am. But in order for my neshama to have an impact in this world, it needs the body. Or, no, I'm a body. I'm really a physical being. But I happen to be a physical being endowed with an extra dimension of spirituality. And my dear friends, the answer to that question gets to the very essence of our self-definition. How do we view ourselves? You know, all of life comes down to that one question. Am I a body which happens to have a soul? Or am I a soul which happens to be housed in a body? And how you answer that question goes to the very root of your identity. And the truth is, to be honest, we probably answer it different ways on different days. Catch me today. Today was a day that I'm a soul. Today I'm definitely a soul housed by a body. Yesterday, I mean, it was the weekend, Memorial Day weekend. You know, yesterday I really was a body that happened to have a soul. Today is a little bit different. Tomorrow we're going to see what's going to happen. This is the nature. But I just want to point out, how dramatic is it that the tension, which marks the very essence of the human condition, doesn't even go away after death? That same tension remains. See, even after I leave this world, I am tethered to it until the body is no longer. It's only once the body ceases to exist that ultimately, again, the soul is free and clear to go where it needs to go. And I would take the metaphor even a little bit further. You know, in this Gemara, the tragic character is the young girl who passed away and was buried in a mat of reeds because she's captive. She's captive. Now, she's captive. Really, her soul is captive. But what an incredible metaphor for life. Because how many times do we find ourselves captive in our own mat of reeds? Right? So many of us are captive to different things. So some of us are captives to materialism. Some of us are captives in bad relationships. Some of us are captives in past trauma. Some of us are captives to failed dreams and aspirations. But so many times in life, you know, the image, and I tell you, like, I find the image even a little bit haunting, because you have the image of this sweet young girl who was taken from this world way before her time, her body wrapped in this mat of reeds, and unable to move forward. And then you realize, like, I think for many of us, we could see ourselves in that little girl, because how many times in life am I wrapped in my mat of reeds? I'm just wrapped. I'm wrapped. And I'm immobile. I can't move anywhere. I can't do anything. I can't accomplish the things that I want or I need to accomplish. I'm just stuck. So there are some times that the soul is stuck even after death because the body just won't stop existing. And there are some times where the soul is stuck during life because I'm wrapped in this mat of reeds, whether it's the mat of reeds of my own creation or whether it's the mat of reeds of circumstances foisted upon me, but I'm just stuck. It's such a profound Gemara. So the profundity of the Gemara really goes in multiple ways. First of all, the Gemara telling us that our loved ones absolutely know what is happening in the lives of the family members they left behind. And hopefully we take some level of nechama. We take some level of comfort in that, because many of us on this year tonight have had to say goodbye to loved ones. And saying goodbye, there's nothing more painful than saying goodbye. But the notion that my loved one knows what's happening with me, even if I don't know what's happening with him or her, hopefully is an incredible source of nechama. We see that this tension that we experience in life even goes into death. The body holding back the soul is something that we experience in life, and at least for a little bit of time after death, is something that occurs. The soul is kept here by the existence of the body in some way. And the metaphorical mat of reeds, which held back this little girl from ascending on high, that metaphorical mat of reeds, my dear friends, have we identified what our mat of reeds is? What's the mat that's holding you back? What's the mat that's keeping you captive? What's the mat that's tethering you in your present circumstances? What's the mat that's miring you in mediocrity? What's the mat that's holding you back? Identify the mat. Now, the incredible thing is, when a person passes away, they can't do anything about the mat, like the girl in the story. But when you're alive, if you identify your mat, you absolutely have the ability to untangle yourself from it and move your life forward. But there's one more piece, and with this I'm going to conclude. If you look at number 5 on your sheet, there's an incredible piece by Rabbi Levi Yitzchak Berdichev. So Rabbi Levi Yitzchak, Zecher Tzadik V'Kadosh Levracha, asks, he says, Nishalti b'medinas lita. I was once asked in Lithuania. Now, Medinas Lita, and I have to understand something. Medinas Lita, Lithuania, was no good place, was not a good place for a good Hasidic Rebbe to be hanging out, right? They were not rolling out the red carpet in Medinas Lita for a Hasidic Rebbe. So, but interesting, so I don't know, again, I don't know what the circumstance, I mean, Rav Levi Yitzchak himself was not from a Hasidic family. He did not have a Hasidic background. He found Hasidus actually, again, as a young married man. So interestingly enough, one time I was asked in Medinas Lita, Mipnei ma nikra chag Shavuos b'shem Atzeres. The Yom Tov of Shavuos is called by the Torah as Atzeres. Atzeres. So why she was called Atzeres? So the Rebbe says something amazing. He says, he gives a number of answers, but he quotes a fascinating idea. He says that if you look at every Yom Tov has two elements to it. There's a mitzvah associated with the Yom Tov, And then there's a prohibition to engage in malacha, prohibition to engage in forbidden labor. He says, that's why I have right. So think about this. Pesach, you have matzah, and you also have an Isra malacha. You can't do malacha on Pesach, right? So Sukkis, you have sukkah, dalet minim, and you also can't go ahead and do malacha. There's one exception to this paradigm. Even Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, right? Rosh Hashanah Shofar. Yom Kippur has fasting. What's the one exception to this rule? The one exception to this rule is Shavuos. Shavuos. The Rebbe says, Shavuos doesn't have a mitzvah. Doesn't have a mitzvah, meaning eating milchiks or eating cheesecake, right? If that justifies breaking your diet, if that makes you feel better, then fine, you could call it a mitzvah. But lemaisa, there's no mitzvah, right? Eating milchiks is a minog, beautiful minog, but there's no mitzvah. There's no mitzvah on Shavuos. No mitzvah on Shavuos. Therefore, the only, meaning no unique mitzvah on Shavuos. So the only thing that Shavuos has is the prohibition to engage in malacha. The prohibition to engage in forbidden labor. Therefore, says Rav Levi Yitzchak, that's why Shavuos is called Atzeres. It's called Atzeres because the only thing you have on Shavuos is don't engage in malacha. Interesting. So if you look at number 6, the last source on your sheet. So here, in the Sefer Mesilas Baruch Hasidus, he quotes over here from a number of different sources. But so the Mei, Saskar, and others, why is that? Why is it that on Shavuos, which is the Yom Tov that celebrates Sinaitic revelation, the reception of the Torah. So why is it that there is no unique and specific mitzvah? Why is that? And he gives such an incredibly beautiful answer. Listen to this answer. He says, paragraph base in number 6, Levar Zos, Naktim Yisod, that the following idea. He says, Kimo Lamashal, Eafshar Liros Bebehiros HaShemesh Rak Al Yidei Maskim. So he says, in general, you can't look at the sun without sunglasses, right? You need sunglasses in order to be able to look up at the sun. So here, the Kozor of the Nei Yisrael says something so beautiful. He says, in general, the ability to absorb the radiance and holiness of God is impossible by mere mortals. So what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu do? He gives us mitzvos. And mitzvos are like sunglasses. They allow us to absorb the radiance of God in a more measured, digestible form. So, right, what the sunglasses is to the sun, a mitzvah is to the luminescent radiance of God. I can't absorb the full radiance of God directly, so the mitzvah kind of gives me a more limited, maybe even like adulterated level of exposure. This way I can connect with HaKadosh Baruch Hu based on where I am. But look at paragraph dalet number 6. Amnam b'chag ha-shavuos, Zochem Yisrael Hiskalos Ar HaTorah Ba'atzmuso Lelo Tzorech Bilvush Gashmi Ke'em Tzoy Lahasagas Ar. Says the Bnei Yisaschar so beautifully, Shavuos, something dramatic happens. Shavuos, there is an unadulterated exposure to God. So Pesach, you want to experience God, I do it through the prism of matzah. Sukkis, you want to experience God, I do it through the prism of sukkah, through the prism of lulav and esrog. Why? Because I can't experience God in a complete, unadulterated form. I need to take it through a little bit of a prism, a little bit watered down. God is too great. God is too holy. God is too luminescent. There is one exception to this rule. One time of the year where you could have full God exposure and handle it. And when is that? The Yom Tov of Shavuos. The beauty of Shavuos, the Yom Tov of Kabbalah Satorah, is the Yom Tov when we get to connect with HaKadosh Baruch Hu without a prism, without a medium, without a filter. There is a complete and unadulterated opportunity to connect with the Ribono Shel Olam. This is the beauty of Shavuos in general. That's why Shavuos, says the Bnei Yisaschar, does not have a unique mitzvah. There's no one mitzvah because the mitzvah is always the filter for divine connection. It's what allows you to look into the sun. But Shavuos, I don't need the sunglasses. Shavuos, I don't need the mitzvah. Shavuos, I don't need the filter because HaKadosh Baruch Hu allows me to connect with Him in a complete, unadulterated fashion. And I think something amazing comes out over here, which is that Shavuos also offers us an incredibly unique opportunity to be able to connect with our loved ones in a dramatically different way. Why? Because normally there is a little bit of a disconnect between us and our loved ones who are no longer in this world. For one simple reason, my loved one who is no longer here is no longer a physical corporeal being. He or she is without a guf. All they are is a neshama. They exist on a purely spiritual, unadulterated spiritual plane. So what could I, as an individual, have in common with my loved one? So we'll get to that, what that means. But on Shavuos, when I too receive spirituality without a filter, without sunglasses, without a mitzvah, when I receive that unadulterated dose of spirituality from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I have more in common with my loved ones who are no longer in this world than any other time of the year. You see, my friends, I think for many of us, when we ask ourselves, like, what's the day when I feel closest or most connected to my loved ones who are no longer in this world? So maybe sometimes it's the Yahrzeit, which makes sense. But I think very often for many of us, it's also like Yom Kippur. Because Yom Kippur is a day when we kind of become non-physical beings. But the B'nai Yisrael says it's not true. It's really Shavuos. It's really Shavuos. Because Shavuos is the time of year, is the Yom Tov, where I am more soul than body. Why? Why am I more soul than body? There's no unique mitzvah. There's no unique obligations, no unique avoda of the day. It's very simple. Because Shavuos is the one day where I have an unadulterated divine exposure, unadulterated divine essence. I don't need the sunglasses again. I don't need the filter. I don't need the mitzvah. I get to receive HaKadosh Baruch Hu in his totality. Do you know who else gets to receive HaKadosh Baruch Hu in his complete grandeur and totality? My loved ones who are no longer here. So the power of Yisker on Shavuos is that when I go ahead and call the names of my loved one, and I daven for their memory, and I dedicate tzedakah in their memory, and I take on obligations or mitzvahs in their memory, in that moment, me and my loved ones are so profoundly aligned, because my loved ones bask in the unadulterated presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And on Shavuos, I do the same. But to end, if we just take this one step further, the way we really connect with our loved ones is by freeing ourselves to the best of our ability of our mat of reeds. Just like the neshama of my loved one is free to soar to the highest of heights when the body is no longer and the body is not holding the soul down in this world, so I also have the ability to soar to the highest levels when I get rid of the mat that is holding me back as well. You want to be close with your loved ones who are no longer here in this world? Find the ability to soar with them. Just like they're not held back by the mat of reeds. Identify the mat of reeds. And we all have them, my friends. We all have mats of reeds that hold us back. But if you identify that which holds you back from self-actualizing, if you identify that which holds you back from becoming the best version of yourself, if you identify that which keeps you tethered to your present mediocrity and you find the courage to unwrap it, to let go of it, and to fly high, then you could connect with the neshamas of your loved ones, not just on Shavuos, but each and every day. So we should be zocha that over this Yom Tov of Shavuos, whether we're going to be privileged to be with a minyan or reciting Yisker by ourselves, because remember, again, you could recite Yisker on your own as well. That as we recite Yisker and we remember our loved ones, and the truth is inevitably we have a heart that's filled with incredible pain for the loss, but incredible happiness, hopefully, because of all the beautiful memories. Let us recognize that when we call their name, they join us. They know what is happening in our lives, even if we don't know what is happening with theirs. And on the Yom Tov of Shavuos, there's this incredible similarity of experience. Our loved one experienced the unadulterated presence of God. And on the Yom Tov of Shavuos, we have the ability to be the same. But if we want to take the experience of being together with our loved ones past Shavuos, unwrap the mat of reeds that often confines us. If you identify your mat, find the courage to unwrap the mat, and then find even more courage to throw away the mat, then just like our loved ones soar into eternity in the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we have the ability to, Amir Tz Hashem, soar as well. We have the ability to grow, and we have the ability to be with them. Granted, separated by a world, but to be with them in the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in the presence of accomplishment, each and every day. May it be Zoche Amir Tz Hashem to give an aliyah to the neshamas of our loved ones. May it be Zoche Amir Tz Hashem to soar with them on Shavuos. And may it be Zoche Amir Tz Hashem to get rid of the mat of reeds and soar with them each and every day. I wish all of you a beautiful and uplifting Yom Tov of Shavuos. Now I'm going to turn it over to Sammy Esterson, who is going to lead us in the recitation of Yizkor, for those who won't have the opportunity to be able to hear it with a minyan, or even on your own, Amir Tz Hashem, on Shavuos. Sammy, Amir Tz Hashem, is going to lift us up as well with the tefillos. Sammy, please.
Yizkor Elohim, Yishmo Kerovet, Avotenu.